bubbles, pretty bubbles in the air. They rise so high, nearly reach the sky, and then, like my dreams, they fade and die. Oh, I'm forever blowing bubbles for you.
That ends the philosophy portion of tonight's program. Nat, you're the most creative yawner I've ever met. My God, I no sooner get on the air and I'm cracking my funny, you start yawning. Son of a gun, bring it up.
I don't blame you.
Oh, listen, I tell you, you guys think life is getting tougher. I want to tell you, I saw a scene the other day. You get that one set up in there, that biggie in there, Matt. Get it set up, because I'm going to need that. I saw a scene the other day in this very, very elegant office. Let's put it this way. It was a waiting room for a famous airlines, right? And I'm walking in there. There's a lot of people walking out. And I walk past the door marked men, you know, men's room. And suddenly the door swings open. This guy, wild-looking guy, he comes running out. And he's a very distinguished-looking man. He's carrying a briefcase, and his eyeballs are swinging in both directions. He says, quick, quick, quick. I said, what's the matter, man? He says, quick, quick, give me a dime. Quick, quick, quick. Yes, he needed a dime. And he needed a dime more than he needed anything in his entire life at that instant. And I thought to myself, man is hardly civilized. Bring it up. Hold it there, Matt. Hold it there. Thank you, thank you. Keep get up that 5-2. Now, do you realize, you of course understand what was his trouble, don't you? Right. Now, hey, incidentally, that must be the one thing that sets us apart from the beasts, Ed. Hello, Ed. Do you mind if I make a point of philosophy here that you might approve of, Ed? I'm not sure, but I think you might. The one of the things that sets man apart from the beasts of the field is that man is the only creature that charges his fellow creature for, let's say, the performance of natural functions. You know what I'm saying there? I mean, you have never seen, for example, a zebra out there, you know, and he staked off part of the field, and he says, anyone who wants to use this field, what he's got to do is going to have to pay me a dime. No way. And you've never seen an Airedale standing next to a, you know, looking mean, standing next to a fire plug. And he says, any dog that comes along here and wants to use this fire plug, that'll be 5 cents. And, you know, some dog comes along with a desperate look on his face. Oh, but I can't wait. He's sorry. Can't have that nickel, buddy. I'm sorry. Only man. Now, I want to say this. For all of you New Yorkers who think that New York is a civilized city, you had better reconsider. Because there are many, many places in New York where you can go in an entire building like 85 stories high and you will not be allowed to use any of those very necessary facilities unless somehow you know somebody in one of the offices, you know, or unless, you know, and on top of it, can you imagine getting up on the 87th floor of some joint and there you are up there, you're way up in the sky overlooking Park Avenue and all of a sudden, you know, old nature comes along. And you finally get the key, and somebody gives you the key, and you rush into this place, and it's got slots on all the doors, everything. And you don't have a dime. What do you do? I mean, it's a desperate moment, right, Ed? And I want to say this, though. Many of you are not aware that it is not this way in all other cities. And for those of you who think that Chicago is a desperate, barbarian city, do you know what recently was done in Chicago? Did you hear about it, Matt? By mayoralty decree, Mayor Thaley said, from here on in, as of XX date, there will be no pay facilities in Chicago. And they're all free now. Now that's civilization on the march. It'll be maybe 15, 20 years before it hits New York. Because let's face it, New York is the city of the quick buck, man. even oh, listen,
Listen, I tell you. Yes. May I please get back into situations here that have something to do with the reality of our life. I would like to tonight, if I may, salute a great human being and a great American, one of the great Americans of the past 50 years. He will rank with Orville and Wilbur Wright. He will quite probably rank with Henry Ford. And the name is Orville Redenbacher. Orville Redenbacher's Gourmet Popcorn, a man who has devoted his entire adult life to creating an unbelievably fantastic popcorn. 49 generations of popcorn went into creating Orville Redenbacher's Gourmet Popping Corn, and it lives up to its name. And I would like to suggest that when you take a look at the jar of Orville Redenbacher's Gourmet Popping Corn, you will see an elegant cut, a woodcut of Orville himself looking out of the label. Have you seen it, Matt? Well, you can see what creating this great popcorn has taken out of Orville Redenbacher. He's a man who's sapped of vitality, who's been drained of life. And for what? For you. So I would suggest that you try Orville Redenbacher's Gourmet Popcorn and step up. Step up to the higher plane of life. Where is it leading? I mean, where is it leading? Now we have prestige popcorn. Speaking of prestige, I'm not going to do any more commercials until later on, so you can relax, friends. Just take a deep breath, pull your gut in. And I presume that all of you know what time of year this is right now. Well, perhaps you do not know that this is a time of crisis in Hopkinsville, Kentucky, which is now, at this point, the Vatican, the world center of starling activity. Did you hear about that? Listen, if you... Listen carefully to this. Listen. An invasion of millions of starlings has prompted officials of Hopkinsville, Kentucky, to call for federal emergency help. Governor Wendell Ford has declared now a full state of emergency in Christian County, Kentucky, where millions of these fantastic birds have descended like an enormous plague of locusts out of the sky. And they don't know what to do. Listen to this. The starlings roost in a 25-acre pine grove in Fort Campbell. Now, Fort Campbell's right out of Cincinnati, about 12 miles from Hopkinsville. Every morning, they swarm out into the surrounding farmlands, walking around in the used car lots, sitting on top of the shopping centers, flying over to cars, yelling at the people. And they figure that there are now 11.7 million birds in a 25-acre field. Think of this. And they don't know what to do with them. They've tried everything. You know, they had these whistles. They played records of starling alarms. You've ever heard them do this? Oh, yeah. They've discovered what a starling says when a starling is calling for help to other starlings. So they play this on a loudspeaker, and all that happened was that starlings came from as far away as Ohio to give help to the starling that was in trouble. They brought more. Now, the only reason that I'm bringing this up is that there has been a lot of evidence all over the world that the animal kingdom is on the march. In curious areas of the animal kingdom that the starlings are proliferating at a fantastic rate. And have you ever actually seen starlings doing it? No, I don't mean that. Come on, that's a rotten thing to think, for heaven's sakes. Now, come on, the kids are still up. What are you talking about? I'm saying, have you ever seen starlings, doing this convention bit that they do? You've never seen it? Well, see, I guess you Easterners don't know what the heck you're talking about. You sit out there, well, what's so great about that, you know? Because you think when you get five pigeons walking around in front of the Pan Am building that, you know, it's a terrible invasion. But let me tell you, one time I was working at one time in Cincinnati, and you notice that this town here, Hopkinsville, Kentucky, which is near Fort Campbell, is right near Cincinnati. Well, that area, for some reason or other,
is like the Starling Riviera. You wouldn't believe it. In fact, Starling's sitting around in places like Yugoslavia are planning to retire to Fort Campbell, Kentucky. Yeah, you know, they sit around and talk about it. They must, because I was out there one night. I used to do a late-night television show there, and I would be off at 2 o'clock in the morning. Fantastic scene. When I first became aware of how great starlings are, and I have a theory that one of the reasons why the starling is the only bird that you can today in the world of ecology, you know, where we're very eco-freaks, practically everybody in one way or another. Have you noticed that there are endless TV specials on the exotic animals and birds of the world? Every evening there's some of the animal kingdom. And they're always so great. And all the animals are so great that come on these things. They would never suggest, let's say, that the rhinoceros are very happy eviscerating you. They never suggest this. They always talk about what a great animal it is. That all animals are great on these shows. Except man, because they always talk about man being so rotten. But all the animals are fantastic, no matter whether they're lamprey eels or whatever they might be. They're great. Well, have you noticed that there's never been a full-blown special, a 90-minute study and appreciation of the life and times of a starling? Why not? They put every cockamamie little animal in the world that has at least a one-hour special by Bill Burritt. At least, you know, the eels, the snails. I one time watched a thing called the Romance of the Red Gopher Ant. And for 90 minutes I sat there
and watched this guy talk about red gopher ants. And I never even heard of a red gopher ant. Have you ever heard of them? They eat fingernails. But it's terrible. But anyway, there's a whole thing. Well, the one bird that we all know and hate universally is the starling. And maybe that's why he doesn't get that 90-minute special. Because he's the one bird, one that is not endangered. In fact, if anything, the people living in his area are endangered. The starling is proliferating like crazy. And in fact, he's the only animal that we know of that thrives on pollution. In fact, the greater the pollution, the more the starlings. He loves it. A starling loves to sit in the exhaust blast of a 1953 Pontiac, just breathing deep. And, puts feathers on his chest. Is it time for a station break yet? No? It isn't? Oh, well, we'll fill with a commercial till station break time, please.
Your AMC dealer's got the all-new midsize car that economizes on everything but comfort. That car, the roomy 74 Matador. And another important advantage, our 74 Matador comes with an economical six-cylinder engine as standard equipment. And consider this, Matador is the only new midsize car backed by all the benefits of the exclusive AMC Buyer Protection Plan. Which means that under normal usage and accepting tires, if anything AMC did goes wrong with your new 74 Matador in the first 12 months or 12,000 miles, we'll fix or replace it free. Come in today. Meet the unbeatable combination. 74 Matador backed by the AMC Buyer Protection Plan.
Yeah, see your AMC dealer where you get a good deal and a good deal more. Bring it up there, Matt. Thank you. And if you're one of those people who feel you cannot lose weight, unless you give up bread, rethink it, friends. A medium-sized grapefruit has more calories than an average slice of bread. So does oranges, apples, and many more fruits. So these people here, the bakers of Hollywood Bread, have made it easier for bread lovers, people who are hung on bread, who wish to lose weight. They are offering Eleanor Hansberry's Calorie and Carbohydrate Guide free wherever Hollywood Bread is sold. Hey, did you ever see anybody with a curious habit of taking bread and making it into little dough balls? You ever seen that done? Where a guy will just sit there and roll bread into little tiny dough balls. there's all kinds of things. But, I wanted to tell that story about the starlings once again because, you know, a lot of people in this area, really don't know much about nature. I'm talking about the eastern seaboard area here. And I suspect that all these romantic dramas, And that's what they'd have to be called, this romantic kind of Walt Disney-type nature stuff, is directed at city people, people who have lived all of their lives in apartment houses and who have romanticized animals to the point, you know, where they think that they all live in a kind of a big zoo where all animals are kind of soft and cuddly and basically big old kitty cats. Well, I was working at a television station. This was the first time I really ran into the starling scene big. And I would finish at the station every night about, maybe 1:30, 2 o'clock. The show went off the air at 1 o'clock in the morning. And I'd be through at 1, 1:30. And the streets were absolutely silent. And this was right in the middle of the city. This great big city. Cincinnati's a big town. And I'd come out of this place, and it'd be hot, and I'd be all by myself, and there wouldn't be a soul on the street. And in front of the station where we were doing this show, it was one of these streets that had, it was a big wide street, actually, with a divided parkway that ran right down the middle of it. And this parkway had a few little trees and a couple of bushes, and down at the other end of the parkway, right in the middle of this these trees and bushes, was a gigantic statue of a president. And I'll have to ask you a question. What president is identified with the city of Cincinnati? Lee, can you answer that question? What president is identified? You don't know. Okay. All right. What seems to be going on in their problems? All right. But they had this presidency made out of bronze. And he was sitting on a bronze horse. Now, this bronze had been there for like 100 years, and it was all green and cruddy colored, and it was big, a big statue, and it had lights on it. Well, one morning I came out of the station. It was about 1:45, maybe 1:30, in that time period, you know, it was 1 o'clock, something like that. I walked out of the station, walked down the steps, absolutely silent the street was, except for one thing. Not a car was moving. It was a hot night. Temperature was maybe, 95, close to 100. And I could smell the river. There are times when you live in a river city, no matter where you are in the city, you can smell the river. The river is a great big vein of life running right through the town. I could smell the river. It's hot. And I was with my friend. This guy was an engineer, and both of us walked down the steps, and Bob turned to me and says, "What the hell's that sound?" I said, "I don't know." We could hear a sound that wasn't quite a hum. It wasn't quite a buzz. It wasn't even a rattling rasp. It was a curious undercurrent of... Well, have you ever wondered how it would sound if you took a microphone and you had a very sensitive mic and you could drop it down into an anthill and turn up the gain a million times, the sound of a million ants walking? What would it sound like? Wouldn't sound like anything human, actually. It would be a kind of a rattling, crackling, distant, humming, curious sound. And Bob said, "What the hell is that?" I said, "I don't know, Bob." We stood out on the street for a minute, and then we saw this, all the trees stretching for about 10 blocks away from us in this parkway were curiously black. Now, these were trees. It was black, literally black. The ground was black. And the statue of this president sitting on his horse was completely black, and in the darkness, there was faint light coming from street lights. It looked like the statue was moving from within itself. It was just crawling and moving. Just weird scene going on. And I said, "Bob, what is that?" He said, "I don't know." And then we saw a squad car slowly moving down the street. It stopped, and two cops got out. And they walked to the other side of the street, and all of a sudden, one of them produced something just astounded me. He began to shoot Roman candles off.
Roman candles were arching up. You know, these balls would fly out, and the balls are flying up into the trees. And every time the ball would land in the trees, you'd the tree would rise up off the ground. It looked like the tree would literally go up in the air like an explosion and drift back down. And I said, what the heck is that? And we wandered down the street looking up into the trees and at the ground, and it seemed, there it was. It was unbelievable. At least, I would say, it must have been 5 million birds. Millions, millions. I don't mean a little flock like you see once in a while around the West Side Highway. I mean millions. You couldn't see the trees. They were all over. They were on the ground. They were all over the statue. And I walked up to this cop and I said, what the heck? What's going on? He says, man, he says, I don't know. He says, we just got a call. He says, we come down here. He says, we can't believe this. Look at this. It's the first time a major starling invasion hit a major city in America. By the way, this made headlines all over the country. They had landed right on the city and took over the city. That one block area, they were on this area there, that one block, and they weren't anywhere else in the city. Just right there, see. Fantastic scene. Well, Bob and I walked along the street on the other side. We didn't walk under these things because it was curiously frightening. Have you ever seen the movie The Birds? You saw that? Well, have you ever wondered why anybody would make a movie like that? Because most people have never, ever felt that curious fear of birds. Do you know that there is a psychological disease, which is basically, it has a long, involved Latin name, but it's basically an unreasoning fear of birds. There is that kind of fear, where some people really get hysterical when they are around a bird or they hear of birds. Just like there's an unreasoning fear of snakes too. There's another kind of person who just falls into a fit when he sees a snake. And these incidentally are allied problems. But have you ever wondered about that movie? To people who have never been around an area where birds have taken over, this movie would be incomprehensible. But walking along that street, I discovered a totally new fear, and I can't explain it. Now, I'm not a bird. In fact, I like birds. I'm not an anti-bird guy. I dig birds. But that night, walking along the street, myself and Bob were both walked very quiet. Because it was a scary scene. As far as we could see was this great black, all I can say, it was like millions of maggots or something. And they kept going up and down, and they'd rise up, and you could hear them just making a strange murmuring sound. And they were not the cheeping. They were not making the bird sound. I guess the sound came from their wings and the feathers. And just this concerted clicking of beaks and stuff. Ooh, wow. It was wild. Well, of course, the next day, what these birds did, as soon as the light came, as soon as it hit maybe 5 o'clock in the morning, the light started to come up, and by 5:30, the sun was beginning to show around the edges, these birds just took off in one fantastic cloud. Just, in fact, it was such a roar, they took off in one roar, that I lived about maybe 2 or 3 miles away from where this thing was going on. Believe it or not, I heard the roar of this fantastic flock of starlings taking off and leaving. And they went up in the air. They just sort of rose like a great big mushroom cloud. And no matter where you were in the city, you could see it. They were just rising like a great cloud right from this one area where the grass was and the trees were. They just rose up in the air like an enormous cloud and just took off. Well, everybody's, the next thing happened that everybody on the radio, they were all, the newscasts on TV and radio, they were all saying, well, they were all delighted. They said the birds have left, the birds have left. And there was the invasion of the starlings, and they have left, and they're gone. And this was like at noontime. And everybody went around, acting like nothing was wrong, and everybody talked about the wild scene of the birds. And it was about 5 o'clock, and I was downtown at that point, And I was just going into a place where I was going to meet a friend. We were going to have dinner, and we were going to have a cocktail and all that. And I was just walking into this elegant place when all of a sudden I was hit that it was
suddenly dark. It just got dark like that. It was like a shadow just fell over the street. And I looked around, I looked up, and over me I could see this great river of birds. Thousands, millions, billions of birds. They were practically shutting out the sun. And they were all moving down, and I could see them going over the buildings, just moving, and I knew where they were going. They were going right back towards the station. They were going back to this little park. Ooh, just like that. They had come back. In fact, you know, you realize that the starlings go to work every day, just like people. And yeah, that's right. And the starlings had left the night before, and they went out to work. You know, what do they do? Where do they work? Well, you know what starlings do. You've seen starlings work. They hang around the bushes and snipe butts and yell at people, and they fly over your car after you've washed it, you know, and they do all this stuff. And that takes a lot out of a bird, you know. And these birds go out and do this stuff all day long, all on their own, of course, not in a big flock. And then at night, they come back to the hotel, which is this where they're staying. See, they just came back. Well, of course, the city is in an uproar. At that point, newscasters began to denounce the mayor, as they always do. You realize, of course, that whenever there's an inexplicable phenomenon hits the world, irresponsible leadership is always blamed. This is invariably the case. And so I remember coming into the television station, and here is our editorial reader. You know, every television station has a guy. And now here is an editorial from station KLNUCK. This does not represent necessarily the views of the management, but this is our editorial, and any responsible views will be given a responsible airing. And now here he is, J.D. Bullard, with the editorial for today's station. And he comes on, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It has come to our attention that the invasion of the starlings, which has just recently hit the city of Cincinnati, is a result of poor planning and poor leadership on the part of the city hall. We feel that they should have gotten the technical help and aid necessary to know that the starlings were coming to desecrate our fair city. And we say that it's not too late yet for this irresponsible leadership to do something about the invasion of the starlings. Thank you.
I was sitting there thinking, gee, the mayor did it again. I mean, he should have known them starlings were coming.
Well, you remember when the people were going to lynch poor Lindsay here because of the big snowstorm here a couple of years ago. I mean, anybody that would allow a snowstorm like that to hit the Bronx right in the middle of his administration is obviously a man worthy of nothing but contempt. So this is always the way it is. You notice the worldwide oil shortage is usually blamed on Nixon. You know, well, you know, somehow he's controlling the oil in Yugoslavia, every place in the world. Well, this is a common human situation. Blame it on whoever can't blame you. That's the basic rule that is followed in this thing. So I'm sitting there in the station. I said, hey, did any of you guys see these starlings? And they said, yeah, wow, it's fantastic. Well, I was the only one who actually would see them, because I was the only one that came out late at night. All the rest of these guys had leave 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. The starlings had not yet fully gathered. Well, by midnight, they were out there. And by 1 o'clock in the morning, after I got through with my show, I went out on the street again. Bob and I went out. This time we're wearing tin hats. We both go out on the street. You couldn't believe it. If last night was a fantastic crowd, tonight it was 3 times bigger. It's like as if the starling world had just won the National League pennant, and they were all there celebrating. You could not believe it. The street was absolutely black. And now the buildings, remember, this is a main center street. The buildings rose up on either side of this street. The buildings were covered with them. They were on the window sills. They were clinging to the flagpoles, everything where they could sit. There were billions of starlings, and they were all crawling. They were all awake, you know. It was like the buildings were crawling. It was a wild, Hieronymus Bosch scene. And this time there were about 25 squad cars out there, and they're really desperate. Some guys are shooting
Roman candles. You know, that's kind of duty I kind of would like, shooting Roman candles at starlings. You know, the little red balls and green balls are flying up. This didn't bother the starlings. In fact, you could hear the starlings had gotten so they loved fireworks. You know how people like fireworks. And every time they would shoot these balls up in the air, the starlings would go, ah, oh, you know, they would love, look at the green one, Charlie, you know, shoom. And more starlings were coming from, say, as far away as Indianapolis because, you know, they wanted to see the fireworks, too. You want to be where the action is. And these guys were running up and down, and they had horns now. They were you know the kind of horns they take at the, they take the ball games. You ever seen guys with those big plastic horns? Those terrible-sounding horns. You know, the kind they blow at Shea Stadium, you know, that animal, primal, caveman, lunky cry, you know.
I'm an Ed Cranepool fan. Roselawn loves the Mets.
You know, this is kind of a, you know, a dull clod sound. And these guys are blowing these horns. And the birds are loving it. In fact, a crowd of birds descended on one cop, took the horn away from him, and 5 minutes later they were up in the tree blowing a horn themselves. So it was, you know, it was just get totally out of hand. So I stopped by one of the cops and I said, what are you going to do? And he says, I'll tell you what we're going to do. He says, we got plans, man. He says, we're just going to have to deal with these birds. He says, enough of the horn blowing. Enough of this stuff of sitting around here and shooting Roman candles at him. He says at 3 o'clock in the morning we're bringing out the heavy artillery. So I hung around, and at 3 o'clock in the morning a police department truck arrived and began to pass out little shotguns. Have you ever seen these bird guns? Not the big ones that are used for shooting ducks, but these are little 410 gauge guns which they use for museums. They go out and shoot rare birds. You know, they stuff them, they put them in a museum. And so these guys started to walk around the streets shooting these guns. You know, you'd hear like that, the gun would go, and you'd hear the pellets rattling among the birds in the tree. These things bounced off these birds like a pea shooter shooting at an M64 tank. Nothing. The birds would laugh. Come on, get me. The guy shoots, and the bird shakes his feathers, you know. It was humiliating to realize that mankind is totally helpless in the face of 27 million birds. You couldn't even shoot them. Well, of course, from that day on, the city was in a turmoil. Every day, the birds would come at 5:30 in the evening, and they would leave at, say, maybe 6 o'clock in the morning. But in between time, they would sit on the city like a gigantic, fat, enormous bird pie, you know, just sitting there. And the city, you could smell them. And you could hear them in your brain, even when you're walking down the street. They took over the whole city. It was just like, well, can you imagine what would happen if New York City was suddenly inundated by 17 million octopus? Well, everywhere you look, there's an octopus crawling along the street. Eventually, you would see octopi in your sleep, wouldn't you? I mean, you'd start to, hey, there's another one. Quick, he's coming in the studio. You know, oh, no, that's just Joe Franklin. Yeah, okay. No, you know, you'd start seeing these babies everywhere you went. And you could hear them in the buildings. You'd sit in the building like at 8 o'clock at night, and you hear this humming outside in the streets. Now, I'm describing a phenomenon I'm sure that very few of you have ever even heard of, because it, for some curious reason, does not get much news coverage, and it would make a fantastic, I think, a 90-minute special on these enormous, fantastic flocks of starlings. Well, naturally, people began to divide into two camps. There's always two camps, no matter what happens. One newspaper was pro-starling. This was, you know, there's always the very angry liberal newspaper that says, what have the starlings done to us? After all, the starling is a fellow creature, and we feel that the starling should be protected. The starling, after all, shares the earth with us, and we feel that the starling, being a fellow creature, should be honored and protected like all other fellow creatures. Are we after the starlings because the starlings are another minority group? We asked this question of the mayor. Are you after them because they're black and they're a minority group? Well, actually, that was a figure of speech, because by this time, the citizens of Cincinnati were outnumbered at least 40-1 by the starlings. They were in no way a minority group.
The city of Cincinnati, I think, had about 800,000 people living in it at the time. 800,000 starlings were in one tree. One tree. I would say there probably at this point were maybe 25 million starlings. So they could hardly be a minority group. And, of course, then there's the other side. The other paper says, we think those who are standing for the protection of the starlings are irresponsible. We demand the immediate destruction of all starlings. Yes, we are a law and order newspaper. And what is more unlawful than a starling? Whoever pays rent in the starling world. These starlings are sitting on our statue of General Garfield, the President of the United States, which represents... And, they were really mad. So the city is divided now in the pro-starling and the anti-starling groups. And I never realized that there was so much, how can I say it, so much latent hatred for the bird world as I saw during the starling invasion of Cincinnati. And I began to examine starlings to wonder why this is, and I find out. I know why. I know why we don't like starlings. I think it's because the starling is more like a human being than any other bird. For one thing, he's almost indestructible. So is the human being. For another thing, he's an incredible scavenger. Does that fit anybody you know? In addition to that, he has fantastic, chutzpah. The starling is the brassiest of all birds. You cannot discourage a starling. You'd think that if you were to shoot Roman candles at a flock of bluebirds, the bluebirds would die, would pass out just because of fright. You shoot Roman candles at a bunch of starlings, and 5 minutes later, the starlings are back with their own skyrockets, shooting them at you. And another thing, have you ever watched the way a starling walks? Most birds hop. You know, that little hopping thing. You know, they squeak and they hop. A starling walks. He walks around. I swear, I see half a dozen human starlings a minute walking into the Chock Full of Nuts on 7th Avenue. He walks just like those guys. And you know, there's a kind of a cocky walk to him, and he kind of waddles. And he has a look like he's just about to tell you a dirty joke. In fact, a starling will be often seen eyeing chicks, you know, girls. So the starling, I think, is a very subtle creature. He's a creature that we both love and hate, like man loves and hates himself. And then, of course, naturally, there are the inevitable poltergeist specialists. A guy came to the city of Cincinnati and says, I can get rid of the starlings. And what he did was put aluminum owls up on the buildings. Yeah, he had aluminum owls. And these owls had tape recorders in them. And at 2 o'clock in the morning, the owl would go, hoo. You know how owls do? Hoo. And this was supposed to scare the starlings. Let me tell you, within 15 minutes, the starlings, millions more, had come to see the aluminum owls. You know, it isn't often that a bird sees an aluminum owl sitting there hooting out of a tape recorder. And they loved these aluminum owls. In fact, what happened was 2 generations later, a lot of aluminum starlings with curious round eyes began to develop. You know, the starling does not miss any opportunity for all kinds of excitement. So all I got to say, friends, is I wonder whether even the cockroach is going to outlast the starling. Oh, listen, did I ever tell you about the time the starlings all sat on the minute hand of the clock down at the... where 12 million starlings made Cincinnati 40 minutes late one day, just sitting on the minute hand of the clock down at the courthouse. And so they know what they're doing. Hey, you know, bring it up there, please, Matt. Thank you. This was tonight's salute to Marlon Perkins, here it comes.